music, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back at the races, Sirius XM, on this Monday, recapping the weekend and keeping tabs on some of the Derby horse movement. And at the same time, looking at the things that aren't all Derby related. And Andy Serling of the New York Racing Association joins us. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm good. We've had a fun morning, kind of recapping principally the preps. Talked to Steve Asmussen about what went on with the upsetter in the Arkansas Derby and some Kenny McPeak with his horse that might be able to sneak in the back door for Derby King Fury. That's been kind of the principle. Jay Pridman was with us. We talked to Jay as well about.
You've had such heavyweights on. What's a good disappointment to come?
No.
Where does it go for me? How big a drop off could it be after me? Maybe you have to Rosa on after me. That would be like the final plunge.
Well. Ed wasn't plugged in this weekend. He was at Opryland with the kids. He had the kids for vacation. So I think I'm going to give him a few days to kind of catch up on everything that went on.
I need a few years to catch up on.
Maybe. Well, I do, one thing I haven't done is talk about, and obviously you as part of the America's Day at the Races, you're covering, things away from Aqueduct, but let's touch on the New York results. And, that included Chad with, fifth straight win in the Dangerous Hour, or no, in the yesterday in the other stake. Oh my God, Plenty of Grace yesterday. If I'm not mistaken, you handed out the 10-1 winner of Chad's in the Dangerous Hour.
Yes, my job is to occasionally pick winners, so it's a good thing that I occasionally do it. Which are we talking about? Plenty of Grades or the Dangerous Hour, Steve?
Start on Saturday. Start on Saturday, actually, that Delaware.
I was remembering Dangerous Hour correctly, that he won a race at Saratoga, I think on the last Saturday in 87, 86 or 87, won a Cup Allowance, or maybe it was even a stake for the Stereo Breeders when they used to run like different weird races. They don't anymore. And he beat a horse named Silver Voice, Angel Penn, who got disqualified from second. I remembered that. And that was cost me a lot of money. I remember DQs from years before. Dangerous Hour was a nice. I think Dangerous Hour was a growing tribute. I'm not sure, but I feel like he was one of those. With Heroes Honor and Wild Applause and Ski Hero. As far as the race. But obviously, analyze it according to Charlie Bled. And, I think there's issues with him, obviously, unfortunately, because of there's only so long you can be on the shelf with weather issues and come back and necessarily still be able to be competitive. And, Decorated and Vader, they were sort of the co-favorites, they both seem sort of vulnerable. I've never been Decorated and Vader's biggest fan, as you probably know. I didn't disagree with Christoph's notion that he'd probably be better going a mile. And to be fair to him, he did have some trouble. He was pretty locked in top of the stretch, and he may have had an issue getting out. As far as Delaware, he was just a horse that wasn't as bad as his two recent races. It's classic sort of dirtied up horse, and even though he kind of hung a bit in the Artie Schiller last fall, he did run a 97 Bayer, a mild Aqueduct. It would have been good enough to be super competitive in this race, and he had significant trouble in his last race at Tampa. Two different occasions, he was significantly interfered with. And I have no idea what the charcoal was doing during the race. He wasn't obviously watching Delaware. And so it was completely missed. And that's always an advantage. And, his race before that was a Gulfstream and whatever happens in that turf. That doesn't really concern me. He was also probably too close to a fast pace that fell apart. So I just, you know, just to me, seemed like a horse that was a little better than he looked on paper. Rinaldi ran very well in there, too, off the layoff of Jimmy Bond. And they were aggressive with him, but it wasn't like it was just a super slow pace, you know? I mean, the other horses on the pace didn't run effectively at all. One of them was analyzed, it was other issues. But so I think Rinaldi ran well in there. But the Delaware was the Manny Franco gave him a great ride. He cut him over, managed to cut over and save ground in the first turn. He stayed in the rail in the second turn and mangled him out to hit the stretch. So I didn't look at Trakas, but I'm guessing he and Rinaldi, and Rinaldi was the inside speed, probably covered a very, very similar amount of ground, which is a tough thing to do when you're closing, you know, from last, which is what he did. So, I mean, I would give a lot of credit to Manny Franco, to be honest with you. I'm going to look at Trakas while we're on it.
While you're doing that, I looked at this. This was right. This was how many horses originally after the scratch? There was 9 originally, and ends up being 7. Did you what
well,
was it about?
One was an MTO.
That's right. Okay, yeah. Zoomer on the inside was an MTO. What was the process? What was it about Delaware that elevated him to your choice? I mean, partially price. Did you expect a more pace in here? What was it?
I thought I just sort of said.
Yes and no.
I'm sorry. Were you busy while I was? It's okay. I mean, maybe did Tina call or something? Is something going on? Because I'm guessing that your listeners probably know exactly why I picked them based on what I just said. I'm confused. I mean, in all seriousness, I just exactly explained why I like them.
All right, then fine. Then we're good.
I mean, he's better than he looked on paper. And
right.
The favorites were vulnerable. Who was I supposed to like?
But that does okay. For instance, I tried Rinaldi. I mean, what was there in Delaware based on what we've seen from him that was, you know,
Steve,
I mean, he just
let's
hasn't.
Let's move on.
All right.
If you're going to have me on the show, the least you could do is listen to me while I talk. I understand I'm boring, and I have no problem if you don't want to listen to me, but don't ask me to repeat what I just said for the last
I didn't
days.
Sense. Okay, that's fine. What about, because these two races were part of the cross country, that allowance group, and of course Malibu Star came out of it, but Family Biz was a nice $13, $13.80 start to the cross country.
Yeah, I liked him too.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean he was against the track in 2 straight races. You know, I mean he had been wide against the gold rail 2 starts back, and last race he ran was the day of the extreme of the wind, and I guess affecting it on that claiming allowance day. And if you watch the races and go through them, or you just look at my track trends, you'll see that I talked about the closures were severely inhibited. And if you look at the races, almost nobody was able to make up any ground whatsoever. And now he was in a race where the favorite, who was 4-5, was coming up 2 dressed up gold rail performances. And the pace figured to be a little bit more honest in here. And, you know, he's an obvious play. I mean, you've got a vulnerable favorite based on, you know, with the track trips. And you've got a horse that's been against the track. And if you go 3 back with, the horse who won the race, he ran a 94 buyer, which was easily good enough to win this race. So
yeah.
He's an easy horse to have. So, you know, I mean, he happened to win. I mean, I pick horses like this all the time, and they certainly don't win all the time, but they're going to win probably more than their odds. It's probably how you get paid, right? Finding horses that are better than they look on paper. It's not, I mean, you have to sort of, you know, not be afraid to pick horses that lose, you know, and not, you know, it's just the difference between thinking that being some kind of public handicapper, you're, you know, listen, it's like the jackasses that are on Twitter to say, I never pick a winner, you know, and my entire talents are to judge. My talents are what they are, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. But, you know, the entire, you know, your talents should be judged by how many winners you picked, as though picking Delaware or Happen to Get Up was a better pick than the David Donk horse in the second race, who I liked, who got beaten at the wire at 11-1. They were both good picks. One of them happened to win. One of them lost. You know, it's not.
Sure.
And you want to judge somebody by the absolute results. And listen, you do have to at some point be right. You can't constantly be picking horses that are 10 to 1 that run third or fourth. Yes, they're outrunning their odds, but they're still never winning. There's a line between those two, but and listen, I mean, I'm going to act like I'm the smartest person in the world. I occasionally, at least, you know, a couple times a year, need to be the smartest person in the world. You know, it goes both ways. And I think, you know, it's like the TV show, you know, myself, Jonathan, Maggie, you know, we're all giving out horses. We better be right occasionally, you know, so don't, none of us should be overly complimented when we're smart. I mean, a simple, nice pick works, you know what I mean? And move on, because the show's never about us anyway, and the races aren't about us. Not about who we pick. And yeah, you're out, you're going out to live and making picks. It's never a bad thing to give some immediate credit, but that's it, you know. To sort of belabor the point is ridiculous. We're going to be, when we're on TV, we're supposed to be good at what we do, right? We better be good at what we do occasionally, at least.
But, you know, this
all the time. So I don't think anyone, and that specifically myself, should ever be lauded for picking winners occasionally. My God. But on the other hand, I'm not interested in these jerks that, you know, that think my entire, you know, basis should be on, you know, I had one winner today, or, you know, whatever, never picks winners. That's my favorite comment. He never has a winner.
there was a lot going, you know, for a 6-horse race, there was a lot that went on in this. And, you know, that included, you know, Yankee Division, who you knew was going to, you know, be short price. You had to make, you know, valuation of.
As I said, he was significantly dressed up by being on two straight gold rails. Now, I couldn't have had the cross center big five because I could never have had King Fury.
Right.
So, you know.
Made it hard.
I didn't look at the Giants Causeway, to be honest with you, other than to notice it was another race. They're running a Keeneland that's named for a male horse that's for fillies and mares. I guess there aren't enough fillies and mares to name races for. You know, I mean, by my standards, I would have preferred Rushy, but by my standards, obviously, could have won. But it's hard, you know. Just because you have a couple of the horses doesn't mean you got them all. You got to get them all in the same ticket. That's
why a nice horse.
A lot. Not too many people could, right?
No, it was there was that. It's been like this every week. I'm almost every week. I mean, not only do you have to come up with a horse like Change of Control and Family Biz or Delaware, but then there's, you know, some very tough, you know, in this case, stake winner. In fact, that's 2 weeks in a row you've had a crazy stake winner, right? Because Bourbonic was in last week's. So it's a handful. It's a handful. That's, you know, this Family Biz, I'm just looking. What a nice career this horse has had. A 5-year-old, and he's just kind of a knockabout, you know, between.
Have him on the show.
I'd love to have him on the show. He's a Fed Biz. You know, he was bred by the Lieblongs. Alex and Joanne Lieblong originally bred him, and he's now made almost $400,000. Running in this kind of, you know, high claimer. He's been claimed for 20, 32, 32. Interesting. A nice horse. That's you know, you like that kind of horse. We should also include, how about Horologist win in the Top Flight?
How about it?
She's gone on nicely. This has been a hell of a nice New Jersey bred, and Maude has really had her career continue right along.
She had her for 5 races.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's done a terrific job with her. She's run better for him than she did previously. She's a really nice horse. The third horse was kind of unlucky in that race. Third horse didn't get left. Third horse might have won that race.
Oh, that lucky stride.
It was a good return. It was a good bounce back for Mrs. Danvers, who had run poorly down at Gulfstream. And they both ran well and enough to improve, to step up to... you know, to run against some of the big girls, but they possibly could. Horologist has run well in the past, so I think that she's at the very least a fringe player in the major races and has a right to be a player. I mean, she won the Beldame comfortably with a 100 buyer. She's okay. We'll see, you know. I mean, I'm Matt's a vision. I'm certainly looking forward to seeing Monomoy Girl and Swiss Skydiver square off in Oakland this weekend. that's a pretty exciting matchup. We'll be covering that race actually on America's Day at the Races. I think we're on from 5 to 8 on Saturday. That's an exciting matchup. I prefer Swiss Skydiver. I have a lot of respect for Monoy Girl, who shows up every time. But, you know, I was just reading something where Brad Cox is talking about facing the boys with her. This is probably a good year for them to do it based on what we've seen this year, and maybe that's right. Why they're want to do it. But, you know, as good as Monoy Girl is, and her consistency is extremely laudable, it's not a very fast horse. And I would be concerned about who she runs against. And, you know, I guess, but I appreciate they would do that. I think, you know, too often it's become a real problem in racing over the last 20 years of overly worrying about horses' records, you know, instead of running them in big races and testing
right.
them and seeing where they stand, you know. And, I mean, you think about a Beholder, how important it was for her sort of her legacy in a lot of ways that she ran that P Classic and ran that huge race to the Classic that day. If she hadn't done that, there were some questions on what her limits were. And she ran some very good races. I thought one of the best races Beholder ever ran was when she lost the Kentucky Oaks. She ran huge that day. But I think certain important races, and I thought, you know, always one of my criticisms will always remain with Zenyatta. Unfortunately, she ran in softer spots as opposed to trying a couple of Hollywood Gold Cups, you know, and different big spots. And what a win in races like that could have done, or even a loss. You know, her loss to Blame always sort of confirmed her tremendous talent in a lot of ways. In ways that, you know, running in the same race and beating St. Trinians or whoever she was, you know, or stuff didn't do. And I think there's nothing wrong with losing races. It's
yep.
facing that competition, showing the limits of what you can do. And I think we saw in the Breeders' Cup Classic the limits of what Zenyatta could do when she had to, and it was terrific, absolutely terrific. And I think it only enhanced her legacy. I'm sure they're disappointed in losing, but you got to risk something to gain something, right?
Well, this fits in. I mean, we've got a couple other races probably to talk about in New York, but this kind of fits in with the whole discussion point about all these three-year-olds that, you know, that are being anointed. Oh, this one's undefeated. And that one's undefeated. What do you mean undefeated?
The undefeated stuff is just crap.
It's just silly.
They carefully manicure their campaigns in those cases.
Exactly.
You know, and to be fair to Essential Quality, you know, he has run the right races and won them. But just quickly, you know, to go back, Swiss Skydiver is the opposite of that. She's taken on all comers. She's lost her share, but nobody remembers the races. Nobody smart remembers the races she won.
Exactly.
They remember the big races she ran. So Swiss Skydiver is a good example that people don't really care about losses as long as you're trying and you're running in those races. In fact, it enhances her credentials. But as far as the Derby, yeah, I mean, I don't knock the route they've taken, Essential Quality. I would, whether respectfully or not, I would disagree with anybody that as an assertion that Essential Quality has shown that he's dominant over this group. And I think for people that are smart enough to not form opinions on who their Derby horse is 3 months or 2 months or 1 month or even 2 weeks before the race and are open to looking at the PPs and seeing the draw, if you go into this Derby with an open mind and you look at Essential Quality, you're not betting him at a short price. And you're not even betting him at 3-1. Which is a short price in the 20 horse field. Not to say he can't win, not to say he's
right.
not a deserving favorite, but he has yet to run a breakout figure. He's consistently running sort of the same numbers. And yes, he is an adaptable horse, and it is to his credit that he's able to be closer or rate and still run his race. And that is a positive for sure. But the reality is that saying he makes his own trips, there are a lot of very good horses that make their own trips that somebody else made a horrible trip for them in the Derby. And a lot of things can and will happen in the Derby. And maybe he'll, you know, be like that character in Little Big Man who walks the battles and never gets hit. And he'll somehow spend his career escaping trouble. But probably not. And I wouldn't want to take Essential Quality for a price saying, yeah, well, he always gets a perfect trip. No. There's a reason they call him Perfect Trips. So he's probably a terrible gamble in the race while possibly being the horse to beat. And I think that if you look at the PPs, you start looking, it's a more competitive race than that. you know, Rock Your World might be a very good horse. He certainly looked very good in Kentucky. I mean, in Santa Anita last time. But yeah. The pace scenario may be different. Is he going to be as effective a horse if he's not able to get the lead? You know, how is the pace scenario to play? Hot Rod Charlie, same thing. Is he going to be effective when he isn't able to control? How good were those horses in Louisiana? I mean, if somebody said to me, Steve Asmussen's going to win the Derby, I would certainly like to take Midnight Bourbon over the horse that won at Arkansas that got a dream set up in a slow race. So, you know, these are decisions you'll have to make. And I think Midnight Bourbon is going to be a huge price in the race. And I'm not saying I particularly like him, but let's give him a little credit. He's the one horse in Louisiana that showed up and ran well in every single one of their preps.
Yep.
Mandaroon fell by the wayside. Proxy seemed to drop off the face of the earth, particularly after this past weekend. You know, maybe it was the wet track, but that's hardly a reasonable excuse. So I think Midnight Bourbon deserves credit for that. And he's got speed, but he may not need the lead to run his best race. I don't know. I'm just throwing this stuff out there. I think that it's a problem. I mean, you're talking about a race where nobody's running fast races. They're all sort of running okay races. So I think a lot of horses can potentially win this race. Potentially the most interesting Derby in a while, which is a good thing.
I think that'll be the conclusion that people draw. Once we get the field closer to firmed up and people can evaluate, you know, what's going to happen pace-wise. And
I think also, Steve, you know, it gets to the heart of what I'm saying about making these conclusions 2 and 3 months before the race. There's a lot of people say, oh, Sense of Quality is supposed to be the favorite, so he goes up at 3-1, right, in the future pool, which we know is idiotic. And then he ends in the Derby, he's a bigger price. And he made it. He actually made it, and he won the race that he had to win. You know, he won by his neck over Highly Motivated in the Bluegrass. The race could easily have gone the other way. And then what price would he be, right? And he's still got to get there. So stop deciding who your Derby horse is. The lesson to be learned is stop handicapping races long before they're being run. There's just no reason. You don't get paid more. Unless you are getting paid more.
We'll circle back in a second to the Arkansas Derby result because there's some lessons to be had in there. But I do want to touch on a couple of other performances bittersweet yesterday, Andy, Plenty of Grace, Regal Glory, the winner and ran well, and happy for Peter Brand. I sure wish that Paul Pompa was still there.
Oh, well, it's nice that the horses are, you know, she was bred by Paul. He raised Mary's Follies, who was her dam.
Yeah.
So it's nice to, it's always nice to have those Pompa horses run and remember Paul. So I agree, obviously. I don't think there's a single person on earth that doesn't wish Paul Pompa, that knew him. I don't think the whole world is concerned with each of us. But the people that knew Paul and had any association certainly wish he was around, no question about
exactly.
it. He's a wonderful man. He's a rare person in racing where you can't find anybody that has a bad thing to say about him.
well put. First start for Peter Brandt and starts out the 5-year-old year nicely,
how about gives the second horse claim for $12,500. Two races in a row, one last fall and one this year, and everyone will say, oh, she can only run an aqueduct. I don't know. But I know that, you know, the pace wasn't that strong, but I thought she ran well last time.
Yeah,
she was good. She was really battling with Regal Glory down the stretch. She didn't just, that one didn't get by her. Regal Glory may be a little lazy. That was a nice start, no question about it.
We should mention, too.
Now, here's the question. Plenty of Grace was trained by John Beach. Who was her final trainer?
Ooh. Don't know.
Man has been on your show in the last probably 5 years, maybe less. Tom Skiffington.
Ah, how about that? How about that? Good job. Plenty of Grace. We love Skiff Dog.
I think Acacia was born the same year Tom Skiffington was stopped training. We were discussing that too. She wasn't familiar with him, and I said, "God, I'm old." And God, you're young.
That'll shake. Yeah, that'll make you look at your birth certificate. I know that everybody was excited about the performance of Stage Raider at Keeneland, but if they didn't see Always Karina yesterday, 92 buyer in the debut.
There were three extremely impressive maiden winners over the
Yes.
Week. One of them was Following C, who won at Oakland, Bapper's horse.
Yep.
Another one was Sage Raider, the Have to Justify, won the last race in the slop at Keeneland and got a 95 buyer, the same figures as Lexington. Following C got the biggest fig of three-year-olds. He got a 97. I think he ran 50 seconds slower than the account lead. And then Always Karina, the first timer for Three Chimneys, that won the first race. The Half Disruptor, also in the slot for Chad Brown, got a 92 buyer. So, yeah, there were two Chad Browns and one for Baffert. Three very impressive maiden wins. The other two were second-time stars. This was a first-time starter. So, yeah. The future's just getting brighter and brighter, Steve.
Yeah, there was also actually a maiden at Oaklawn, the one of Brad Cox's, the Daredevil. He's My Honey Badger. Got a solid graduation number, 86 buyer for that one as well.
Yeah,
on Saturday.
The other run happy in the race with Fallen C for Steve Asmussen.
Happy Mac.
Big figure being second, chasing that horse.
Yep.
He's been a very unlucky horse. You know, he started his career in the highly motivated maiden race at Saratoga, where he dueled with that Newsome for Todd Fletcher, and then he went to Keeneland and got involved in the cutthroat duel again, and then he comes back off a layoff and he runs into this freak show. He's just like an unlucky horse, but he's actually a pretty good horse for Steve. He's just managed to get in days where there's so few races that have strong paces, he seems to find strong ones in every race he runs, and he has a right to be a decent horse, even though he's 0-3.
Agree. I brought him up. I brought him up with Asmussen because it really felt like. And actually, that was a race that on Friday when we were weekend previewing, that was a race. There was somebody else in fact, the horse I think that was third that had major pedigree as well. So there's a rising.
That a Cox first time starter, I want to say.
Larry Jones. Larry Jones had the Larry Jones. Yeah, had the sibling to Rocketry, the horse that was third, Rising Empire.
Oh, $700,000. That was a $700,000 yearling.
Yes, yes, that horse is going to be okay. That was first start of the season for that one. There was a bunch of pedigree on parade on Saturday. At Oakland. In fact, I didn't notice how the Firing Line sibling, no good, didn't run good, was seventh, Frosted Blue. Andy, speaking of Oaklawn and of course the broadcasts that are tying together, action around the country. What explain to everybody the pace scenario lesson that was being discussed pretty immediately after the Arkansas Derby in regards to Concert Tour and whether it was simply a matter of, getting an easier pace in the Rebel, or is this a horse, do you think, might be a little distance compromised, doesn't necessarily, going to relish that trip? Because it sure looked like he was comfortable on the backstretch. He was rating comfortably.
Well, listen, I was wrong about Cotta River and people that said and also to say it was a bad ride in the Rebel is really unfair to Florent, because my guess is this was something that Brad Cox wanted as well. So I don't think it was a bad ride. It was a decision that didn't work out. There's a very big difference between the two, and I think it would be very unfair to criticize Florent for what happened in the Rebel. I don't think there's too many of us out there that thought it wasn't the right tactic. It turned out that he's not a horse that's comfortable rating like that outside of horses. They learned that. These are Derby preps. You don't have to win them. You want to find out things about your horse. So what they found out about Cotta River is he needs to be on the engine. And I thought if they rode him in the Rebel the way they did in the Arthur Derby, he would have backed to run nowhere. Now, maybe they both would have backed up, as it turned out. It would have been a very different race. But if Cotta River's going to run his best race going long, he needs to be forward. I know that. He may not win them. He may not be able to be good enough in them, depending on how much pressure he gets. But at the end of the day, he's going to run worse if he's trying to rate him. So we've learned that about Cattaro. As far as Concert Tour, well, let's see. He beat Freedom Fight. I mean, all this stuff is in retrospect. So I did think he would win the race, but I also brought up there is the scenario, because you knew that Cattaro was going to go, that they got engaged and it ended up blowing up the race. Didn't happen in an incredible blow up, but it did certainly affect their performances. But in retrospect, he beat Freedom Fighter, who came to Gotham and stinks. And yes, he rated that day, but it was a 7 furlongs, and he beat a horse that came back and ran terribly. And he got a pretty soft pace last time. And the pace got hotter. And it was a 16th of a mile longer. I think the concern with him was, as you say, he did look comfortable. Unlike the race call, he was not a length and a half in front in the mid-stretch, but he did get in front of that horse. And not only get a half length in front of him, but as soon as he did that, the other horse just came and swallowed him up. And he got outgained by Caddo River. So it says some things about his distance limitations. And, you know, once again, while everybody was, you know, cavelling about Concert Tour because he won by, you know, many lengths. And, oh, don't forget, Steve, he could have gone faster. He won eased up. He could have gone, oh, he couldn't. And the reality is that when he still ran a 94 buyer, and that's why after the race, you say, let's wait and see the figs and see how good they are. And like when you see Life is Good runs a 107, you go, ooh, he was bearing out, but he's a fast one. And Concert Tour runs a 94, and you go, oh, yeah, it looked impressive, but it's a nice race, but it just puts him in the blob with all the other horses. And he didn't pass his next test. I don't know what, you know, listen. A lot of people, myself included, thought Authentic didn't run particularly well in the Haskell, and he came back and won the Derby in his next start.
That's right.
It's not like Bob Baffert hasn't gotten horses to bounce back off lesser performances and run well. Who knows? I'm not going to say the Concert Tour can't win the Kentucky Derby, but it certainly wasn't a particularly impressive performance. And as far as the winner, yeah, he improved, no doubt about it. And Steve Asmussen, you know, is great at getting these routers to improve. He's not winning the Derby, he's getting a absolute dream trip in a 6-horse, basically a 5-horse field, with a 92 buyer. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe he'll be just good enough like Creator, the other Steve Ashton horse, to beat me by a nose on my birthday for a big score.
They have to bring that one up. Yeah. That was a train wreck in slow motion.
Anyway, but, you know, so after the race, you know, once again, you know, these are Derby preps. Then, you know, you look at the first half of the Derby preps before the final ones, we saw nothing but favorites winning them and logical results and, you
That's
know,
right.
sort of fringe players falling by the wayside and, you know, the names, the ones you expected, the short price horses, continuing on. What we've seen in a lot of the final preps is a very different story. And that's, you know, that's why they're preps. You learn things about these horses, and they're so lightly raced that a horse can improve or a horse can, you know, sort of get exposed. And let's face it, Concert Tour got exposed. And we learned that both he and Caddo River are better horses when they're able to control, especially going longer. But then again, what speed horse isn't better when they can control? I think with Caddo River, I wouldn't put it that way. I would say that Caddo River is just an ineffective horse rating. I mean, maybe going shorter he could rate, but going long, he's not winning races going long unless he's in front against any competent field, I should say. I don't even think if it's a bad field, he probably couldn't do it.
Well, and, you know, you go back, you just look through, you know, you look through the PPs with him. I mean, he broke his maiden.
When he broke his maiden at Churchill, right? He wasn't writing.
Giroux pretty much took control pretty quickly and wired the field. It was in his second start going 7/8 when Speaker's Corner beat him and Greatest Honor was third behind him.
And Miles Deed was fourth, a first time starter for Peter Brandt. I think he's training again. I'm not sure, but he looked pretty good too. I don't know what's happened to Speaker's Corner. We should have to ask Bill Mott about that. He's another Godolphin horse. I mean, Godolphin's
forgot
got a
about him.
That can run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely forgot.
He was a huge favorite on closing day at Saratoga that didn't get the best of trips and ran third. Then he came back and won. And that was a super, I mean, we knew at the time that was a super tough maiden race at Belmont, but, Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see Speaker Scorner come back and Miles D come back at some point as well. That was a good race. Yeah, certainly, that, you've got somebody who's dying to get on your show as the last guest, waiting in the wings.
Well, as it happens, I was trying earlier to finalize Rachel Blackmore, the rider who made history on
the one that
Saturday.
Grand National. That was awesome. Yeah.
I can't.
That was great.
I tell you what, you watch that. It is so harrowing to watch. It, you know what is it? 8-9 minutes. And the horse, it's unbelievable. Guys, you know, flying off and crazy.
I heard two announcers.
Oh, yeah. They go back and forth. They after, you know, each one does, I don't know, a minute and a half, give or take, 2 minutes.
That's pretty cool.
It is. Andy, what was, you'll remember this.
I will.
You remember everything. The network did that with maybe Jimmy the Greek and Charles C. Canty and where different people commented as the race was going on. Do you remember this?
Seriously, Steve?
Yeah.
You'll remember this? Yeah, no.
All right. No, I'm good.
Esoteric, random. You'll remember this in history. You're really firing at all cylinders today.
We had a baby over the weekend. You know, I mean, you know what it's like when you have a baby. It throws you all off. Your whole biorhythm.
You didn't have a baby, and I don't know what it's like when you have a baby. But other than that, you just nailed both of them.
Finally, looking ahead to this week, I was hoping, I don't know how I can pull this off because I'm leaving Friday for Kentucky. So we're running in the first and second.
A 3 week sentence there or 2 weeks?
2 weeks. But we're in those first two races on Thursday, and I would love to come down, but I just don't see how it's practical.
I don't know how would you like me to address that, Steve?
Well,
I'd love to not see you at Aqueduct this weekend.
Exactly. I'm gonna see if I can't.
I'll alert the media. So if you're gonna be there, you know, there'll be a special entrance. I'll tell people, you know, that are coming for their COVID shots to make sure they make way for you. I'll make sure there's special food in the you know, upstairs for everybody. It'll be a huge day. Should we make a brisket?
That would. Oh, now you're talking. Now you're talking. Now I'm going to try. All right, I guess. All right, why not?
What?
No, you can. That's fine.
You have somebody else after me, or are you really out of? You're out of gas because you seem to be out of actual things to talk about.
Well, no. The fact that we're running, we got I don't think I can't remember that we've ever run horses in back-to-back races in the 13, 14 years.
What percentage of your listeners do you think are overly interested in the travails of DT Stable?
People take an interest. They root for and they.
What
you
percentage?
Know.
I didn't say nobody.
I would say
less than three.
I'm going to say, it's in double digits. I guarantee you.
Guarantee me.
Guarantee.
By saying that, you're reducing the actual number of listeners.
I think people do like to they follow the horses and they like to see us succeed and do well.
I'm sure that we all like to see you do well, Steve. But for instance, what percentage of your viewers do you think knew that the second DT runner was Scherzando in the second race? Because I know I didn't know that was your horse until you just told me.
Well,
I didn't know what percentage of your listeners think did.
It depends on how many looked ahead to Thursday. That's part of the equation.
Yeah, finished handicapping Thursday's card, and I didn't know this was your horse.
All right, well, it is, and I've been looking forward to getting him on the grass.
I tell you what, it just changed my entire outlook for Thursday.
It should.
Yeah. No.
I love
now
it. Andy.
Really looking at things differently. It's been great, Steve.
I appreciate it. And America's Day at the Races back this week.
Every day.
Of course. Every single day.
Every day December.
It there's no stopping it now, huh?
Nope.
And of course, the scene will shift too. The coverage scene will start to shift to Churchill when the Churchill season
starts.
Maybe
I'll starts. See you in Kentucky. Wouldn't that be exciting?
You're definitely coming, huh?
Yes.
Terrific! Terrific. What was the last Derby you saw?
In person?
Yeah.
Only if I'm reincarnated.
Well, that was a Breeders' Cup. That was a Breeders' Cup when you came.
You were my airport ride.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. All right. We've gotten all sorts of dumb things out of the way. Talk to you later.
Andy Serling, everybody, as always, just it makes your week. The warmth, the the cuddliness. he's the greatest. There's only one Andy. I was trying to, frankly, that one of the reasons I was in fact distracted at the beginning of the conversation, because I had been trying separately as we're talking. I was trying to nail down, Rachel Blackmore, to join us, and that it's going to have to wait till tomorrow. Unfortunately. So we'll see. And of course, now actually the timing, if I had gotten the confirmation, I would have carved out, you know, a full 25 minutes for her, but, we can't get her on today. So we will save it. If you did not see the Grand National, this is really an important story. And I don't know if people realize, the significance of her winning this race and becoming the first female jockey to win the National. It's an incredible moment, and it was so much fun to watch. And the ride she gave, I mean, it's one thing, you know, the fact that it's historic is fine. She put a ride on this Manila Times, and, you know, that was one of the four or five horses that Steve Anderson did bring up the other day. And in fact, I'm pretty sure I saved that list. I usually that kind of thing. No, it's not there. That was one of the horses here it is, that Steve talked about. Here we go. Kimberlite Candy, Acapella Bourgeois, who I think pulled up. Of course, the favorite, you know, the favorite only made it a little past, maybe about two-thirds of the way through before he was eased, that cloth cap. But, and actually, I'm just looking at these five. Steve had the first and fourth place finisher, right? Burroughs Saint was fourth. And you had two enormous prices. And Henry de Bromed runs 1-2 in here with Manila Times. And she, if you watch the race, all you have to do is train on her in the green and yellow jacket. It looks a lot like Bob and Beverly Lewis's jacket. And she is tucked in no worse than about seventh at any point, saving ground. She's all the way on the inside, all the way around. And there was only really, we'll obviously discuss it with her, but there was only, I would say, two jumps. If you watch her, I watched it again this morning, and there's really only two jumps fairly late. One of them was the 26th, because I marked it down. The 26th, Manila Times did not get over as smoothly. But otherwise, and there was one other jump where he landed a little awkwardly. But other than that, he jumped so beautifully and is absolutely traveling throughout, just perfectly positioned and always traveling like a winner, really. So it is really pretty special, and I cannot wait for the chance to let her talk about it. There was a lot out of this, and I think everybody, knock on wood, right? I think everybody got out okay. There was one rider that was kind of motionless. I think everybody came out okay. And you know, on this topic, by the way, not only was there a that part of the historic weekend, but on Friday, was it Friday or Saturday morning, Kerry Brion, who took over the Jonathan Shepherd stable, she had her last starter of the season, and she ends up winning with that Mean Queen, which is very cool. So congratulations, and we'll get Kerry on at some point, I'm sure, too, as the rest of the it was Friday, by the way, but she had a very successful winter jump season, hunt meet season over at in the UK. So congratulations to Kerry Brion as well. I forgot to mention it Friday, but you had they were at Moncton this weekend. The My Lady's Manor, they were doing the, I think it was mostly timber, right? Mostly timber races on Saturday. We got 5 minutes to close out, and let me see what else we can go ahead and slip in. We'll probably tomorrow, I'll probably get a chance to get Michelle Lovell on. How about Michelle? Always happy for her to do well. And Change of Control was tremendous and a nice price boost. Brett Calhoun, by the way, with the two wins. And Calhoun, I mentioned this at the beginning of the show, Silver Dust in the Ben Ally, and by my standards, in the Oaklawn Mile. So we'll hear from Brett. Mig will be in tomorrow as well. Touched on most of the... I think we did. I know I mentioned them in passing. Oh, you know what I didn't talk about was the Count Fleet. And Whitmore certainly got the pace to run into, but Florent Giroux with a very clever ride on CZ Rocket. That was very nicely done. And by taking the outside flow, was able to, kind of lope along and let the pace unfold and then move to the outside. And that, I think that spelled the difference. I mean, wins by two, but in the meantime, Santana was a little kind of bottled up. And I mean, he certainly wasn't impeded, I wouldn't say, at any point. But he did have to kind of wait. And, if you flip-flop those trips, Whitmore maybe wins, and CZ Rocket might get there late. So nice job by Giroux. And this horse has just been – this was what he was always meant to do, obviously, was keep it short. And he parlays the Hot Springs prep into a Count Fleet win. So they'll I'm sure they'll meet – down the road as the, summer turns into fall, Whitmore and CZ Rocket. I think he got a triple digit out of this, if I'm not mistaken, right? Yes, a 101 buyer winning the Count Fleet. And that's his first in a while, actually. You go back to a route at Churchill, November of 19. He'd been mostly running, high 90s, 95, 96, 97, 98. So second off the layoff and a nice win. Gary Barber and Saul Kumin and Tom Cagle with CZ Rocket and Florent Giroux. Beside that, we talked about those impressive maiden winners. Two for Chad and one for Bob Baffert. And let's see what else following. See, we got Edgeway. I'll reiterate the John Sadler can win elsewhere mantra. That he's my honey badger that I mentioned. That win for Steve Landers. And this is a daredevil colt bred by Richard Forbush. And this was a fourth career start. Did get a start in as a two-year-old and then ran into Otto the Legend last time. Turns back. Nothing like a turn back, right? Career best. And maybe that's, again, what he wanted all along. He's my honey badger, 85 buyer. You know, speaking of Cox, there was another. No, that was, I brought that horse up with Steve Asmussen. Mighty Mischief I liked. You know, it's funny about, I'll give you one other maiden from the card on Saturday. And Gus and I were texting back and forth. And you don't always need to have a strong win opinion. And the nightcap Saturday at Oaklawn kind of proved that. There was a horse that jumped out at me a little bit when I handicapped Friday night, and I wrote this up Friday night because I knew we were going to have the baby was going to come Friday night. So I knew I wouldn't have time Saturday morning to really, do the write up. June Sandra in that mile and a 16th maiden race, the 13th at Oaklawn. Donnie K. Von Hemel has had a horrific winter. Very strange. But June Sandra kind of jumped at me second time going long. And I made him the best value horse. And if ever there was the kind of horse that you want to utilize it with the reverse tri-key we talk about and as an exacta, bet the horse a little bit to win, bet him underneath the obvious horses, and then tri-keyed him. And the triple paid $200 for a buck. Paid just under 190. And 41-1. And ran, okay. So just well enough. So you don't always have to pick winners. You just find the right horse and bet him right. That goes a long way. This was fun and a fast 3 hours. Steve Asmussen, Kenny McPeak, Eric Hallstrom on Erev Indiana Grand, Jay Pribman and Andy Serling back tomorrow with more recapping and Mig and much, much more. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Play those horses that Steve Asmussen told you about, right, at Delta today. And let me see, what else? Delta, Mahoning, Parks, Turf Paradise, and Will Rogers, your action today. Good luck. Talk to you in the morning.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.